true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Am I in my ears?
Am I in my
ears? I am. Okay.
Good morning.
Hello. Well, here's a fun piece of intel. My dog, one of them, is having his balls chopped off as we speak.
Nice.
Bye-bye, balls.
The undercarriage of my car is being wrapped in cables, which is kind of the same.
That is weirdly kind of the same. Undercarriages being messed with.
As we speak.
Aw. Wrapped in cables meaning what?
So that they're less likely to steal my catalytic converter again. Nothing stops it fully.
Weird.
It's the world is no fun anymore.
We're all dying slowly.
We're all dying. Everything's being stolen.
What? Remind me, what does a catalytic converter do?
It is a, it absorbs toxic chemicals so that you don't have quite so bad of... It's part of the exhaust system, and it like okay. It's like a filter, but it, in order to work, it uses super valuable like heavy metals, like, I don't know, ionium and mitantium and camphasium, whatever. I don't know what they are, but I think one of them is titanium. And so if they steal them and sell them to a disreputable place that will take them, they can extract thousands of dollars worth of valuable metals from each one.
Oh, that's why they take them?
And that's why they take them.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and especially Priuses, an average one could be worth like $300-something, but a Prius one is worth like $1,200 to a thief.
Damn.
So it's a good night's work to just like take one.
Yeah, for sure. And they just like strip them and sell them for parts, the catalytic?
Yeah, they just take the piece and they go to a scrapyard that doesn't care about the law. And then that person has a way of extracting the fucking metals from it and they get them.
So the law says you can't get rid of a Prius battery, right?
Not a battery. It's the whatever this thing is, the catalytic converter. And the law now, it's a new law that actually says you can't buy from you could buy one from a garage that, you know, is licensed and bonded, and you know that they didn't steal it, that they got it because it was, you know, they got the car because of salvage or whatever. But you supposedly can't buy from an unlicensed source. But
oh, I see. But people do.
But people do, clearly, because they're still stealing them.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm always interested in a weird way of in like what's going on the black market. Like, what's the shady business that's happening currently?
Yeah. I guess it's just all that. That's it. That's the black market right now, is all catalytic converters.
That's funny.
It's madness. It is so many constantly being stolen.
Weird. What a weird specific thing.
Yeah. Like, I guarantee you, I'm going to go with 100% of the Prius owners I know have lost their cat at least once.
Wow. And to be clear, you lost this off the new Prius you just got.
Yeah. My old one that also had a little cable wrap situation never got touched.
Interesting.
And this one didn't have a cable wrap. It had a plate. And that plate, they just went through with a and just sawed it off.
Well, you know, something interesting that happened here, not great, but when Chauncey was here, which he just left, so we have many stories to tell. But
great.
When he was here, we got up in the morning, or I got up and went to the car, but had to come back in. And when I got to the car, I was mad at him because what I thought had happened was he can be a little bit of a fucking slob in my car. Like, he'll leave his like power bar wrappers in the side doors and like three different cups, and there's just shit everywhere. So I was like, hun, can you please not leave your shit in my car? Just throw it in the trash. And he apologized. And I said, also, did you know the back door of the car was wide open all night? And he was like, what? No.
And please don't take a giant dump right in the middle of my back seat. that's really not cool.
That's really gross. I thought you liked me. Anyway, I said, also, like, help me understand what the choice to remove all the trash from the central console and put it on the seat. He was like, Katie, your car got broken into. And I was like, oh, my bad. Oh, shit. Wow. What? So we went outside and I realized, like, somebody totally rifled through this car. The door was open. They took all the shit out of the central console, left it all over the, and I put garbage in the central thing, which is probably gross, but I do. And then now he did leave wrappers in the door, but that's fine. He's doing his best. But yeah. And then I was like, but how did they get in and not damage the car? And he's like, I think that's the thing I fucked up, is when I went out last night, I didn't lock it. And so I think people were just like, open car, let's check out what's in there. And luckily, I didn't have anything in there.
Yeah.
It freaks me out because it's literally, it's like 10 feet from my unit.
Oh, yeah.
The car is right there. So I have a first floor unit right on this particular street. Anyway, that happened. And then I took my dog to have his balls removed. Are the two related? No.
No.
It feels very weird as an adult. I've never done this as an adult.
I mean, the dog might feel it's similar. Like, you're rifling through my business.
Exactly. And
there's two different violations occurring.
Yeah. I know. I've only ever, like, dogs I've gotten, like, Squeezle had her parts removed when I got her. And then other dogs, I was a kid when that happened. So I've never been through the removal of the parts by my choice. It just feels mean.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. I think it's okay, I guess.
I mean, there's all this.
I wouldn't mind having my balls removed. I feel fine, whatever. As long as I can still do things that I want to do.
But there's all the stuff. Some people say you remove the balls and it causes them to gain weight later in life because it
changes their hormonal.
Yeah. But then if you don't remove the balls, they are the kind of dog that wants to escape the house, mark up territory, hump everything, be aggressive. And he does try a lot of those things. He's just got way too much fucking energy and he can be very intense and nibbly on people and places. So I'm hoping it just changes his behavior a little and, like, calms him the hell down so I don't have to, like, dose him with CBD at night.
Yeah.
I hate the idea that he's going through a little doggy surgery.
He'll be all right.
Okay.
You got to go pick him up later.
Yeah, they like call you to give an update, which they were supposed to do around noon or one, but they didn't yet. So that means maybe he's on the table later. And I don't know. And then they tell you when to come pick him up and they haven't told me yet. Oh, let's see. We have a Margaret question and a Frida question. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we can do Margaret's question from before if we want. And I mean, somehow there's a connection between our friend Frida's question and the theme we started to talk about. It's a true crime question.
It's a true crime question?
Yeah, it's a question about true crime as a genre.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that question. So I was like, yeah, let's do it.
I do. I love that.
What's going on? Chauncey was here.
Chauncey was here.
I just had a little staycation with Denise, which was really lovely. So we both have had, like, intense partner times.
Yep. Yeah.
Talk to me. What's going on? How'd it go?
Well, good is the main answer.
Okay.
We have so much history. There are pieces of things to work through and we've been really doing a good job of working through them. But you hear the word in there. It's work. You know, there's some work in there. So I don't know. We've done an excellent job communicating about a lot of things and he's not defensive anymore the way he used to be, mm-hmm. which is, like, changed everything.
How about you?
I'm just doing, God, neither of us can believe how much better I'm doing. Like, it's so much better.
Nice.
Just basic, like, communication style stuff and, like, leaving room for his feelings and just everything. It's going well. We're doing a good job. I was also proud of myself that even though I was the one who was kind of more of a dick in our last incarnations, and I've had a lot of amends to make, I had a couple times where I had to be like, hey, I know I was a big part of our problems, but this one's yours and I need you to look at it. And I cannot take this on because I can't walk around as, because I'm the designated bad guy, I don't get to call you on stuff. Like, that thing you're doing, you can't do that. And he was like, you're right. And totally owned up and was great about it. And it was great.
Nice.
We're both very independent and we're both only children. And so spending all that time together is a lot. It was a lot. And we both were like, oh, this is great. I gotta go. You know, it was a little like, it was just a lot. And it was very nice. But I really felt like, oh, thank God I have my space back. You know, when he left, not like I want him to leave forever. Just 10 days together is a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot.
Well, that, I mean, maybe this long distance thing is a good thing.
That's what a couple friends might have been saying. They're like, knowing you and knowing your patterns and knowing your tendencies to run and bail, it's kind of great that he's so far away because then it builds in a space.
And then every time you're together, it can be a treat.
Yeah. Or like, it also gives me time between each visit to process and integrate in therapy about it, which then makes me more spacious next time I see him. Like,
yeah.
Here's an example. I was marveling with him about, he and I, when we were together before, went to Thailand together once. And then this trip, we went to Miami together. And holy shit, it was awesome. We stayed in the coolest Airbnb in the coolest part of town. Miami blew my fucking mind. I could talk this entire episode about Miami, but that's a whole other topic. Anyway, I was so happy on our trip because we were floating in water. We're like on the Miami beach in the ocean, floating in the ocean. And he was like, remember when we floated in the ocean in Thailand? And I was like, fucking A, we did that. We've had a lot of fun remembering stuff from our old incarnation and marveling at how different we both are and how great that is. Anyway, I said, you know, I'm really sad when I think about Thailand because I had this feeling in the pit of my stomach the whole time we were in Thailand of like, ugh, this guy, this like nausea feeling about him.
Wow.
Which now understanding myself better, I know was really a trauma response to intimacy and it had nothing to do with him. And I'm so sad about like, I mean, that's like, what a trip we took. It could have been so fun.
Those feel like wasted times or something.
I'm just bummed that like I wasn't able or ready yet to look at things in that way.
Yeah.
And to process that particular set of feelings. I remember at the time thinking, there's no way these feelings that are in my body about him are actually about me. Like there's no way. I couldn't believe it.
I know myself, God damn it. I'm certain of this.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was a bummer. But what's good about it is it's like, oh man, we're floating in this water and I don't hate you at all. I like you a lot. You're a cool dude. Anyway, so yeah, there was a lot of real life in it and a lot of fun and a lot of, I'm going to say it, delightful sex.
Delightful.
Because the heart is better on the Katie front. It's healthier now. So it's like so open and like sexy time is more emotionally connected now, which is all right. I'll share this. This is man. This will come back to me.
Are you sure you want to? Well, think it through.
I'll just say this. I'm having a lot of emotional release of various kinds during sexy time.
Okay.
Big, big bouts of laughter, long, long bouts of laughter, or the opposite, something I'm calling sobgasm 2023.
Yep.
Just eruptive, explosive sobbing at the gasm.
Rising out of an orgasm.
Uh-huh.
Yep. I've seen that before.
Yeah.
I've witnessed, not with you, I've shared that intimacy with you.
Yeah.
But I've witnessed that phenomenon.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine who said, yeah, every time I have sex, I have a sobgasm. I was like, I don't think I could do it if that happened every time. She was like, yeah, that's why my husband and I are like sex averse now, because it's like such a profound experience for her every fucking time that she just can't hang.
Oof.
So they've just gotten really non-sexual and they're very cuddly and they love each other and they're each other's best friend and that whole thing. But they're both like, oh God, sex is a lot.
Sex is too intense.
And that's, I mean, it's been cool to see the progress of the healing work and its effects on intimacy directly. It's pretty fucking cool, pun intended. Anyway, so yeah.
Is your dog snoring?
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
You can hear it? That's so cute.
You can hear it.
She's on my lap. Let's see if I can.
She's totally snoring.
Sounds like a little cow.
Yeah, I thought like someone was running a vibrator in the next room or something, but. Squeezy.
I think it's the angle her head is at on my arm. Let's move you a little bit. She's like, why'd you wake me up? I was having a dream.
Best dream when I had my parts still, all the sex. And
I wonder what it was like. Like, she was in a shelter when they took her parts out.
Yeah, she didn't know. I don't know.
I hate thinking about.
I don't know if animals are the same as humans. I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, they feel pain and they're sore and they can't move well and they're just in a cage by themselves.
Right.
Feeling pain. It's less good than if you have a weird cone on your head and you're at a lady's house.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Sobgasm 2023 was delightful. And he came and saw our improv group and had a really good time. And we had a banger show that night, which was really fun. I was part of a sketch fest this past weekend that Chauncey got to see, which my little team sort of stole the show, which was fun.
And you guys wrote sketches for that. That was not improv. That was.
Yeah. People wrote sketches. Other people directed them. I just acted in one. I didn't really feel like having any actual responsibility on a day off.
Sure.
I was like, just let me say the funny stuff. So that was fun. And yeah. That's all that. I mean, there's a lot more relational stuff I could talk about, but the majority of it really boils down to everything I ever think is, that's not true. 80% of what I'm triggered by is something for me to work on. 20% of it is like something for me to be like, honey, I need you to look at this.
Yeah.
And then he does. And it's amazing. I think my dogs are being affected by the insecticide that's on the plants outside my place, and it's really bumming me out. They come around with this sprayer, which keeps the freaking mosquitoes away, but then I think my dogs are getting sick from it.
That's not okay.
Mm-mm. There was an article recently in the paper about, like, careful when you walk your dogs, don't let them just eat any old grass. Try to keep them inside the dog parks eating grass because there's so much DEET being sprayed around.
Oh god.
Yeah. 4th of July was fun.
Yeah. I went to the Mime Troupe show and saw that. That's the, you know, sort of 4th of July thing where they open their show. And for our listeners, San Francisco Mime Troupe is like a 60-year-old musical comedy, political satire, outdoor free theater show.
How was it?
It was pretty good. It was good. I'll be honest, script-wise, like, I was loving it. I was having a great time, and it kind of fell apart in the third act, you know?
Okay.
When I, you know, just timing-wise, it was like the final two or three scenes, I was like, oh, you're just going to wrap it up? Like, that's what we're going to do? Like, it was so great. It was so fun and great and, oh, very important and this and that. And then it was like, and you should just take everything one day at a time. Okay, that's
all you got?
That's where we're going to end it? We're just going to wrap it up like that?
That's funny. Oh, man. Yeah.
Didn't have that sort of everything crashing together in a big farcical way, which you kind of need for that kind of a show.
Totes.
It's very broad, very like everything's extremely broad and audience oriented. And it's almost like old Commedia shows, but with music and about politics and stuff. And so, yeah, but it was fun. Denise and I went, and that was fun to go to that together. When after we'd had a 3 days of a sort of a staycation, because her husband was out of town, and so I went and stayed at their new house, which is a really nice house. So it kind of felt like, you know, we rented an Airbnb.
Oh, I need to know about this. I want to hear about this. How's that? Come on, this is huge news. They looked forever and ever. It was a crazy source of tension and stress. So how's the freaking house and where is it?
It's Elsa Bronte. It's technically Richmond, but it's really Elsa Bronte. Just up at the 80 corridor there.
Yeah.
It's part of a big, sort of like townhomes, but it doesn't feel like a townhouse complex. It just feels like a neighborhood with a bunch of houses. I mean, they're technically in a duplex, but it doesn't even feel like a duplex. The other house is sort of tucked away in a weird way, and it feels like a separate house. And it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful place. It's big and airy, amazing kitchen.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah. Like 3-bedroom, 2-bath. Like, full bath and a big garage. Like, it's got everything they could have wanted in a place. Location-wise, it's a little more remote, a little more, it's like you in Benicia, you know, when you lived in Benicia, it's kind of up and away from everything. There's, you don't, you cannot walk to a thing.
Right.
I mean, you can walk to the big mall with the Target and stuff, but there's no coffee shops.
How far off the freeway is it?
It's right off the freeway. Like, boom. It's like, it's, you know, for my house, it's a little far. It's a lot farther than where they used to live. And so, like, if there's no traffic, it's 15 minutes. But most of the time, it's 45 minutes.
Yeah.
To get to them. So that's a bummer. But other than that, we had a great time. We binged the Indiana Jones, all four of them.
Oh.
So, and then went and saw the new one in the theater.
Oh, I didn't know there was a new one. On the last day.
Yeah. So, like, we binged all four of them at home.
That's great.
Just, like, endless, like, we're going to do more Indiana Jones.
Wow.
Every spare minute, you know, it was either sex or Indiana Jones.
Yes.
And swimming. Those are our three tasks.
They have a pool?
In the complex, yeah. It's like a neighborhood pool more than a complex. It's more like a giant neighborhood.
I love that. And she's happy with the place.
Yeah. She loves it. It's great. It's a beautiful spot.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
That's a great ending to a challenging story.
Yeah. So she's, you know, digging into putting things together and, you know, restoring furniture and getting cool furniture and then doing restoration on it. And that's like her new hobby.
That's fun. I love that.
Decorating the place and making it nice. So yeah, that's a good situation.
How did the two of them meet?
Probably on an app. Like Bumble or something a long time ago.
Because it was a long time ago, right?
Yeah, it was early days of, I think that they met on an app and then dated and then got married and been married for a long time.
Yeah. I think she said together 16 years, married 9?
I thought it was more.
Maybe I'm wrong.
You might be right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think I always base it on how long they've been together. I actually don't know what year they got married. So that was really lovely. It was basically I'm in a bit of a work valley right now. There's just not a lot of work. And so instead of, you know, being like, oh God, I don't have enough work. It's like, well, how about I take a little vacation and then just do nothing for 3 days, but have a great time.
I also always feel like a thing like 4th of July is like people in the world aren't doing shit for those 3 days around it.
Yeah.
So like when you try to be someone who's working on those times, you're like, I'm the only human on earth trying to work, so let me stop trying.
And my work requires other people to want me to do
exactly.
It. So,
yeah, totally.
So if they're not doing anything, they're not doing anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's fine. It was a great time. We had a great time and a lovely, just almost no conflict, no anything, just good times. Trying to eat based on our new eating because we're both doing we both did the food intuitive. So kind of working with that and kind of.
What are her adjustments?
What are the big ones? Fake sugars.
Yep, same.
Big one.
Yep.
And that's a massive one for her. Nothing for me. I hate them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, what? I was out with, okay, wait, one more thing. I'm changing subjects just because it reminded me.
Yeah.
While we're just on topic of what's been going on, I went to a show at the, not a show, an installation, whatever you want to call it, an art show at the De Young, the Kehinde Wiley, who is the artist who made the Obama portraits. That's how a lot of people would know this person.
Okay.
I don't know what to say. It might just be the most beautiful and powerful art installation I've ever attended.
What?
I'm not a huge go to museums and see art person, but it was stunning. It was perfectly.
Wow.
Perfectly curated, perfectly lit, perfectly laid out, perfectly everything. And that's just the framing around it, right? But the actual art itself is so stunning. So anybody who is near San Francisco in the next 2.5 months, it's there through like October 15th or something, you have to see. It's some of the most stunning art. So his thing is he's a huge fan of like the quote old masters, you know, the European tradition. But he recontextualizes all these like old poses and old actual bases on certain actual photo or paintings or marbles or carvings or anything. But like from the old, like either Greek or European masters, and repurposes and you know, every time, and it's always casting a Black American usually, but now he's working in another country a lot. He does like street casting, meaning he brings people in that he meets. It's like, I want you to be my model for this. And he always recontextualizes it with Black folks in the center and in such stunning, vibrant detail. Mm. And sometimes it's crushing imagery. Sometimes it's a fallen soldier is what, you know, based on an old Roman thing, but now it's a kid in a hoodie, you know, and that's crushing to look at. But the intense beauty and vibrancy with which he puts into the images, the colors and the detail and the scale, Jesus Christ. This one painting is the size of a building wall, like a mural, but it looks nothing like a mural. It looks like a painting, and it is a painting. And the bronzes, that these sculptures, I can't, I'm just saying, it's tear, like I start choking up. It's so powerful.
Wow.
It's just, go see it.
Okay.
Or in just for yourself, since you don't have access to it, go look up some of, I hadn't really spent any time looking at Kehinde Wiley's art, but look at it as, you know, on as big a screen as you can, maybe on a computer with as high a resolution so you can really see the beauty of it.
That's amazing.
Look it up. That's it. That I just had that experience. My buddy, who's an art historian, I called him up. I was like, hey, you gonna hang out tomorrow? I have the day off. And he says, you can't come and hang out with me unless I'm taking you to this art, to this, to see the Kehinde Wiley show. Because he'd seen it the day or a few days prior. And he was like, I had to go back. He had to bring me. He was just like, wow, everyone must see this.
I love this.
Yeah. It was so powerful. So there you go. I had a powerful art experience, which is nice to have when we have very few of them.
Very happy for you. Yeah, man. For real. That's cool. That's really cool. Well, the closest I can come to that is the Airbnb we stayed in. I kind of wish we could include pictures with this podcast today, because the view out of that place was like, it's like, I can't find words, like brand new skyscrapers all downtown Miami in the Brickell area, if anybody knows Miami. And then views of the river and views of the bay. And we could walk out the front of our building and just walk into all the newest. Miami has turned into a European city. It's the sexiest European city that is not in Europe on earth. I think I'm torn now. I'm like, is Austin or Miami the coolest city in America right now? I'm not sure, but it's one or two of those. I was floored, particularly being from there. That city has transformed so radically. It's parts of it are unrecognizable. It's so come alive. The Brickell area used to be like a Burger King and four tall office buildings. Now it's like everything is a cool cafe next to a yoga studio / amazing fresh foods, next to a club, next to a art studio, next to the coolest place to live you've ever seen with the rooftop garden, next to, like, it's just hot. And then Wynwood is like the Silver Lake of Miami. And it was amazing. Galleries, coffee shops, the whole thing. The weather was perfect. Miami Beach, unbelievable. Miami is fucking incredible. You see the colors on this mug? That's Miami. That's the vibe. This is the vibe. Everything is this. Basically just a very colorful mug that I'm showing him with like striped colors on it for the listener. Just everything is a vibrant mural that is like 70 million feet tall that you're like, look at that one. And then the next thing, oh my God, there's another one. Art everywhere, salsa everywhere. I just don't know how to even.
Yeah, how does that square with it being in Florida? Like, how does Miami square itself with Florida?
It doesn't. I mean,
even though it is Florida, it's all anybody knows about Florida is Orlando and Miami. Like, that's it.
The thing about it is it's so close to Cuba. It's so south. It's so far south. When you look at the equator line, like the equator line, the latitude line, you're in Mexico if you're on the West Coast. It's at the level of Mexico. It's very far south. So it feels already very like a different world because it's so tropical. The landscape is incredibly difficult. The nature, not difficult, different. The weather is different. And then the Cubans are so heavily populate the city. Every restaurant or store you go into, you should probably speak Spanish. Or you're going to be like a lot of the time just be like pointing at stuff trying to order. And I happen to love that because I speak Spanish and I learned it from those people. So like I just felt so at home, but it was like, as much as I've transformed since I lived there, the city has transformed that much as well. So it was like this amazing homecoming where my home is no longer, I don't have a charge. We went to my childhood home, no charge on it. We went to all high school. We went to my elementary, no charge, no charge. Every other time I've ever been in Miami, it's been like just a charge trigger fest. Nothing. In part because of all the work I've been doing, but in part because this different fucking city. It was a really spectacular experience. Like, it was pretty spectacular. It was pretty amazing. So that was the art exhibit I saw. The city of Miami being entirely different.
That's awesome. But I mean, and I even feel like it's pretty queer as well.
Yes. There's a lot of it that is. Interestingly, the Cuban culture is a complicated topic for local Cubans.
Uh-huh.
Like, I hung out with my friend Tracy and her Cuban friends. She and her husband had their friends over that are a couple, and they happen to be Cuban. And I made a passing comment like, oh, it was so fun being in Miami, because they live just north of Miami, because the Cuban culture and the Latin, da da da. And the two Cubans in the room were like, you like Cubans? And I was like, yeah. They were like, have you hung out with them? And I was like, yeah, I grew up in Miami. What are you talking about? They were like, we don't like Cubans.
Huh.
And I was like, why not? And they talked a lot about the politics, because we have to keep in mind, Cubans that are in Miami, 9 times out of 10 have escaped the Castro Cuba.
Right. And so they're virulently anti-communist, and which makes them,
therefore, quite Republican.
Yeah.
And so in fiscally anyway.
Yeah.
And so if you're a liberal Cuban and you're like a nerdy emo music listening tech industry Cuban, you're like, fuck the Cubans.
Right.
Because the Cubans are like traditional family values, Republican financial stuff, whatever. I have a white lady outsider perspective, and a Jewish lady perspective, which is very different. Like, I don't know. I've been thinking about this and how to sort of quantify it or characterize my love of the Cuban culture, because I don't want to be doing that thing where I see it as like, what a charming, fun, sassy culture, because it's different from me and my white hegemonic group. And you're so charming, you natives that I don't understand.
Right. Oh, your food and your music. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
For giving me this thing, which is your food and your music.
Yeah. But the way I actually feel about it is like, I was raised there. Inside of it, it feels like something that brings me joy and that I love, that I'm certainly not claiming as mine.
Yeah.
Like, I am not Cuban.
You're adjacent to it.
Yeah, but I can assimilate and I can speak to them and I feel a part of the world of it, but without like, I'm not like appropriating it into my...
Right. You're not going out and wearing the clothes and yeah, except for as a little bit of a fashion flair.
Yeah, which is really just Europeanness and Spanishness. And
yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. So it's interesting. Just like, I'm not hating on the Cubans the way some of the Cubans I know are hating on the Cubans, which is just an interesting thing to look at. Also, something I loved about the Brickell area, it was so, so diverse. It was Arabs and Spaniards and Cubans and Black men and, you know, women whose ethnicity I could not put a finger on, and Chinese people. It was just like such a diverse, like very European feeling experience. Anyway, it was fucking rad. I'm repeating myself. It was very cool.
That sounds awesome. I haven't done any traveling lately. So like that feeling of like going to a place and having that, even if it's, well, that's not true. I went back to New Mexico.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, you did.
Yeah, I am lying.
Well, should we do spiritual stuff for the people?
Sure, why the hell not? We've talked a little bit about our lives and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, is there anything else? Nothing else to report, really. I don't know if anything will come up when we're doing readings and stuff, but
yeah,
I'm still been like looking into Gabriel as a...
Oh, yeah.
As a source of conversation. Like, and I guess my question would be like, if I were to be able to talk to source of some sort, say like, I need a little more help on like, how do I don't even really know how to like pray / talk to my, how do you contact your guide directly and say like, hey, I want to talk to you, or hey, I want to ask something of you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing some sort of like listening to some, you know, guided meditations and stuff.
I have answers for this.
I figured you did.
Yeah. We should do this.
Yeah. So that I would love to hear more or talk to Gabriel or hear more about my relationship, because the thing that I keep coming back to is every time I see something about it, you know, read more, it's just the words are so weirdly right on. Everything about Gabriel.
Really? Like, where are you reading it?
Just any, you literally just Google, like, what is Archangel Gabriel about or whatever? And, you know, just any article, any, even the shitty ones, and you can tell it's badly written.
Yep.
But they just keep coming back to, it's about, he is about communication. He is about clarity of word. He is about bringing word and deed into action. He is about making sure that words are heard, about words and words and communication. And
it's Cassidy in an ascended master.
Yeah. I'm just like, holy shit. I love this thing. It's so good.
Cool. Let's ask about Gabriel for you in the records. Like, how do you best contact him?
Yeah. And then we can also talk, if we have time, let's do these questions that came in.
Yeah, let's do both of them. There's two, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to urinate. Surprise, surprise. I'll be right back. I could do it right here, but I feel like it would make us all feel weird.
That'd be uncomfortable. All right. See you in a minute.
Hey, what's up? It's Remy. I have been going down some podcast rabbit holes. Rabbit holes, whatever. I've been listening to a couple series of podcasts. The first one was about Teal Swan, and it was called The Gateway, and it was like a 6-part expose documentary podcast series. Really well done, really produced. I couldn't stop listening. I was just like, mam, 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 just eating it up. So I just went through all 6 episodes super fast, and then I just felt shitty, just shitty. And now I've moved on to The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling. Same thing, super well done. I don't even know how many episodes there are. I am halfway through episode 5 right now. And I have to take a break because of how shitty I feel. I can't stop listening, though. Yeah, I feel shitty. So right now they're in episode 5. Anyway, they're talking about this. Apparently, there was some kind of war between radical feminists and trans rights activists that I missed. I mean, in my life, in my personal experience, those people are the same a lot of the time. Like, a lot of people who care about trans rights also care about women's rights, and there it is. Like, it's not a binary. It's not a either you are a feminist or you believe in trans rights. No, I've never seen that in real life. I've never seen that in real life, on the internet maybe, but I don't think so. And, you know, or maybe I'm just totally delusional and living in my little utopian bubble, which is also very likely. But inclusivity is inclusivity. If you use inclusive language, you're not actually erasing the feminine or erasing the masculine. You're just being inclusive. And I know, like, I identify as non-binary, and I am absolutely a feminist. You know what else? I have no Native American ancestry. I know that because I did Ancestry.com. But I deeply believe in Native American rights. So, you know? Anyway, I hate this binary that I'm hearing about in this podcast about this war, this battle, either radical feminism or trans rights. What? What? This is silly. This is silly. It's not real, in my opinion. Not real. Inclusivity. Inclusivity is inclusivity. Let's all be inclusive. Let's all say yes and. Rami's rules.
Welcome back.
I have more to tell you. Okay, we're back from peeing. I've realized while peeing, a lot of realizations happen on the toilet, don't you think?
Yeah, they're a good place.
I realize there's something deeper I want to say about the Chauncey thing that that might be more interesting and helpful to humans to hear, which is I'm going through the thing of, I just want to own this, right? I'm like, I realize I have been for a long time, probably my entire adult existence, maybe my entire existence this lifetime, I've been like, who's my person? Where's my person? Where are they? Who are they? Will I find them? Is it even a thing I get to have this life? Never mind, I'll let it go. Wait, but it's back. Do I want it? I want it. Where is it? Where's it coming from? Is it a thing? Maybe it won't be a thing. So what's happening for me is I'm going through this thing where I'm like, what is this weird feeling I'm having about all this? And I realize it's like, that question is answered and I am very uncomfortable with it. I'm like, wasn't I worried about something? What was I working on? I don't have anything to work on. And then I'm like, I have a million things to work on. You could build a theater. You could audition for something. You could take the dogs out. And I realize it's quiet there. It's all quiet on the Western Front when it comes to like, where's the partner? It's like, I haven't wanted to solve the problem. I have wanted to have the problem.
Yeah, goof.
And this isn't it. We talked about this in my healing class today, Star Beings, which, by the way, we start next week. If you're ready for a mid-level to advanced energy healing class, hit me up, katierubin.com. We talked about it today in class about how addiction, when you have addiction in your nervous system, it's the psyche's attempt at self-regulation. It's a misguided attempt at self-regulating the system because you didn't get the right kind of love or the kind of love you needed or whatever happened in your whatever. And then when you get sober or like you clean up your act or you get closer and closer to like having a lot of self-regulation, start to see the subtler ways that your nervous system is addicted to being addicted to stuff.
Yeah.
Like, and so where am I going to find it? Am I going to find it? The pursuit of finding the person is much more exciting, I realize, than having the person.
Right.
Eric is an excellent, he's like clearly the best person for, it's so clear that I'm uncomfortable.
Right. Because what do I do now if I don't fight?
It's not a problem.
Yeah.
There's no problem. And I'm like, oh no. So then I've been in therapy talking a lot about like what'll come up is I'm like, am I bored? Am I already bored? I'm bored. And then it's like, I've been asking the question, is this thing I'm calling boredom actually a defensive strategy? And there's a big yes on that. There's like, I need to believe I'm bored so I can justify shaking it up and ending it or making something dramatic happen.
Yeah.
Then I go, okay, well, we're not going to shake this up and destroy it again. We're going to face each piece like we're committed to. And in the meantime, like, what can you bring into your life, Katie, that is appropriate amounts of exciting and drama that isn't a problem, you know, like a problem? Like, you could move forward with some other shit in your life and that would create some drama that would be healthy.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, build that theater company already or
yeah, you
make that show.
You can find a problem.
I could create all kinds of cool problems that create cool shit in the world that aren't, let's end my relationship because I'm comfortable. I am by far not the first person to have this realization. It's like talked about in 12 step, literally every meeting. But when it's happening to me in my body, I'm just like, holy shit, that's what that feels like.
Yeah.
It's a trip. It's a trip to the ego. So anyway, that's a thing.
Yeah. Jesus.
Addicted to the pursuit. And I'll tell you, I am a process addiction person. Let's talk about that for the listener. So there's addictions that are like, you're just addicted to the chemical, heroin, alcohol, etc. But then there are process addictions like food addiction and love addiction, sex and love addiction, power, money. Uh-huh. It's the process of the binge. So if you're a binge eater, it's like thinking about what you want to binge on, deciding which store you're going to go to, which thing are you going to get the most of, getting in the car, driving to the place, buying the thing, taking it home. It's in the bag. It's a secret. You're excited. Nobody can know. You come home, you eat the thing. Delicious, delicious. You're so high. And then you crash. That whole thing is the addiction. All of that. It starts long before the ice cream is in your mouth.
Do you think that even applies probably to some people's chemical addictions, that it's not actually the chemistry, it's the action?
Yes. Or it's both.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So like alcoholism can be the same. The ritual of the getting the friends together or the ritual of being alone in your room, whatever it is, 1,000,000%. So I just have been like, oh, I am in, this is what's happening. I'm in detox right now from the pursuit
process addiction.
The process addiction of where's my person? When's my person? Is there a person? It's like, oh, fuck. Here, now, yes.
Yeah.
Now what you gonna do?
We want two things at once too. We want our autonomy and we want our
togetherness.
Our togetherness. And you want, yeah. Oof, that's real.
There's a real update. That's just like a layer deeper than what I was sharing before.
So if y'all are feeling that out there, you're not alone.
And send a message, ask a question. We'll get in your records.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
All right. So it's Margaret McCarahan, Frieda Betty Maletsky, and Cassidy Jamal Brown, right?
Yes, that is who we're getting into.
And I'm going to do consciousness so I can ask about some of my shit. Oh, boy. Squeezle, I got to adjust you. I would like to pat myself on the back for something.
Yes.
Just shamelessly pat myself on the back.
Good. You should.
I think Squeezle is the best dog name I've ever heard.
I remember not liking it when you were naming Squeezle. I was like, it's just too cute. It doesn't, but it totally works.
She's a Squeezle. She's the Squeezle-less Squeezle. I just like that there's no other thing named a Squeezle on this earth. Like you have weasels and Squeeze, but not Squeezles.
Mm-hmm.
Except for this one right here. Okay, I'm going to get over it.
She's a little squeezable weasel.
She's a squeezy weasel. Okay. All right, so we'll take a few deep breaths into the belly. By the way, I do have a client in exactly half an hour.
Perfect.
So if you could stop me in 25 minutes, that'd be great.
You got it.
We'll just feel into the heart center for a moment. We'll soften the shoulders and the throat. Then we'll breathe into the low belly. And we'll feel our feet flat on the ground. And we'll see a little foot chakra starting to open at the bottom center of each foot. Spinning open, spinning wide. Like a little tornado at the bottom of each foot. We'll see some roots, 500 tree roots of light anchoring through the open window of each foot. 1,000 roots in total, anchoring down and into the earth. We'll see from the feet up ourselves becoming a big tree of conscious awareness, a tree that expands left and right, forward and back, and upwards into the heavens. So far left, right, forward, back, and up that we can't even see its edges. Hundreds of thousands of branches sprouting off the top, millions of leaves. And we become a nice rooted, grounded, but open receptacle. And so we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know Frieda Betty Maletsky, Margaret McCarahan, Cassidy Jamal Brown, and consciousness in the light of the Akashic Records. Help me to see Frieda Betty Maletsky, Margaret McCarahan, Cassidy Jamal Brown, and consciousness through the eyes of the Lords of the Records. And enable me, please, to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of Frieda Betty Maletsky, Margaret McCarahan, Cassidy Jamal Brown, and consciousness have for them all. I'll go quiet for just a moment. Okay. And as we're deepening into the Akashic Records of these three people and consciousness itself, we're asking to clear, release, uncreate, destroy anything and everything in their fields or mine that would stand in the way by receiving highest and best guidance, direction, clarity, and insight for each of them. Okay, can we start with Frieda's?
Yeah. Oh, I'll read it real quick. Ooh, yeah. I caught that one.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
I love that I'm starting to feel those.
Me too.
Those waves. Hello, Katie, Cassidy, and Desmond. I have a random question for the record keepers. While sitting in meditation this morning, my higher self asked me to cool it with the true crime.
Hmm.
I'm a massive true crime junkie. I've been most of my adult life, 20 plus years of all the documentaries, paperbacks, podcasts, audiobooks, etc.
Yeah.
When I first started going through my spiritual awakening around 2017, I took an intentional true crime break for a solid 2-3 years. But as I've gotten a handle on getting grounded and connected with Source, I've allowed a few of my favorite true crime podcasts to work their way back in.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to ask the records if they had any insights here. Would it be in my highest good to avoid this genre altogether moving forward, or is dipping a toe in once in a while okay? What does true crime moderation look like for me? Because I tend to binge anything and everything, rape, torture, murder, if I don't watch myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use my name, Frida Betty Maletsky. Thank you.
Okay. Give me a second here. Okay. When you ask, is it in my highest good to stay off it entirely? That's a big yes, unfortunately. Can she dip her toe in? It's not advised. You know, this is also one of those things where, I'll explain why in a second, but it's one of those things where it's like, you get the food plan.
Yeah.
And it's like, don't ever eat sugar. And you're like, okay, if I do 90%, I'm doing pretty great.
Yeah.
Like, that's how this feels in the field.
And if you were to ask more detail, they'd say, no, it's still not in your highest good to eat it. So you should stay off it, but you have free will.
Yeah, and also, like, highest good, I mean, is hard to live into for every minute of your life.
That's a great point.
Yeah. So, yes, it's in your highest good to stay off it entirely. So then the question is why? And I'm sure you already know a bunch about why, but let me just see how they would frame this. When you're craving it, think of other ways you can ground and get into your lower self that aren't violent because, or true crime related, because watching it pulls you into a realm that attracts it to you. Also, and you're a powerful attractor creator. Also, watching it takes your psyche out of alignment with Source in a way that, pulls you off track more than you might think it does. And then you're having to re-find your alignment more than you would have to if you weren't to watch it. Also, it destabilizes your mood more than you might think it does. But understand what you're looking for is the lower self expression that it gives you. You're looking to own your lower self, anger and fear and rage and all of it that we push into the shadows of our unconscious minds. So how can you, like, what comes through is like a dance class or a pole or a heels class where you're being like sexy and in your body, or like a rage expression therapy session, or just journaling or something that's about the lower self. That would be a more useful form of touching into those energies than the true crime is for you. And they're like, if you do 80-20, you'll be doing great. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I feel like, and this is a question for Katie, not the records, but do you have a relationship with true crime?
I don't listen very much anymore.
But you used to.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we've talked about this in the past. That
big time.
Yeah. And there's something about why specifically women are,
yeah,
like 95% of the listenership and obsessionship with true crime.
It's about mastery and avoidance. So women live with a constant unconscious fear of being murdered, because men have upper body strength and women don't, in a way that most women don't, right? So, women are under constant threat in a certain way. Anytime you're in public, there is a part of a woman's unconscious or conscious mind, depending on the woman, that is scanning the room for survival reasons. So,
oh my goodness, hold on.
So, watching true crime is an unconscious way of, so when you have sexual abuse trauma, there's a term that's applicable that comes up that a lot of sexual abuse survivors pursue, which is mastery or avoidance. So most people go sexually avoidant, or some sexual abuse survivors become sexually avoidant, and some sexual abuse survivors become sexually masterful, meaning that they're going to have all the sex so that they can regain control unconsciously over sex itself. Whereas another way to regain control is just don't have any at all. Some people will swing back and forth between both poles. So for women in general, sexual abuse survivor or not, because you're in a way always at the behest of the male gaze, you're always dealing with sexual assault in a way. So true crime is a way to face it head on without, in a very safe way.
Yeah.
So for Frida, it's how can you face that head on in a different way? And everything this brings up in you when we say this, will you feel into it right now, Frida? And that's a big piece of healing right there on the topic itself. That's a big piece of work for a lot of people listening, actually. Everything that this conversation is bringing up for anybody listening, if you could sink into that right now in your body, feel into it, say yes to your resistance, yes to your heavy emotions, say yes to it, feel into it. All right, let's move to the next question.
We'll go to Margaret's. We have two. One about sleep habits and what about her cat? Which one do you want?
Sleep habits.
Sleep positions. This is Margaret McCarahan, our dear friend of the podcast, FOP. I'm a tummy sleeper, but I'm trying to change this as more often I'm waking with a sore neck for which I'm starting chiropractic treatment. Changing this is proving challenging because nothing else feels right and it's hard to fall asleep. Is it just a matter of breaking a habit, or is there something deeper going on with our choice of sleep positions? Is there anything you can suggest for my sleep position to not cause pain in the morning?
Okay, so what I'm getting is, I'm asking a bunch of questions here. I'm getting like, there is a thing we could do some healing on that would make it easier to sleep in other positions and feel good to sleep in other positions. All right, so we're calling all of that up right now, whatever that is for Margaret. And that makes it hard or scary or uncomfortable to sleep on her back or her side. Oh my gosh, there's a real heaviness here. So we're calling up for Margaret any and all past life energies, past lives and or karma that make it uncomfortable for her body to sleep on its side or its back. We're calling all that up into conscious awareness now. Asking that those past lives be completed and brought to present time now. That's a lot better. This is very interesting and specific. I keep seeing the image of her on her back, asleep, vomiting on her back and choking and dying in her sleep.
Okay, because she's lying on her back?
Yeah, in past life. So we're just processing all that, bringing that to present time, completing all that. That's why it's been uncomfortable or feels incorrect, I think she said, or feels not right. Okay, now there's another heavy thing here. What is this? Is that more of the same? Something else? Okay. It's in the heart. Okay. Okay, Margaret, if you're listening, can you feel into your heart right now? The heart chakra. Okay, so she should be able to sleep on her side or her back now. Give it a couple days, maybe up to 2 weeks, and you should have an easier time, like a much easier time sleeping on your back or side. Is there anything we could do for her so that she could sleep on her stomach without discomfort? The only thing they show me is one of those pillows where you put your face straight down, like a face cradle. That might work.
Like on a massage table.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, keep us in the loop, Margaret. Let us know how that goes. I already returned Frida to herself and sent her, closed her records. So is there anything else for Margaret?
There was a whole other question, but we can.
Okay, we'll do that another time. All right, let me close her records up. A little bit of info as your records are closing, Margaret. They're saying you could use a little more time in your spiritual practice with the intention of getting in touch with the feelings you don't like to get in touch with and processing them in the spiritual space. Like sometimes you might go to have it, your instinct might be to process it relationally, which is great. Try processing some of it spiritually, in the spiritual space that you create emotions, processing them, specifically hurt, feelings of hurt, any rage, blame, shame, regret, or guilt. Take that into your spiritual practice, feel into it in your heart, and let the light meet you there. That would be a great homework assignment for you if you choose to pursue that. Okay, Cassidy Jamal Brown.
Yeah, we have about 5-7 more minutes. Does that give us enough time, do you think? Great. My question is just how do I talk to my guide? How do I talk to my dude? Help me get in more direct contact with this Archangel Gabriel.
All right, there is a specific prayer in a specific book that I have. Give me a moment. It's called From Questioning to Knowing, 73 Prayers to Transform Your Life, I think.
Yep, found it.
Transform Your Life. Okay, so grab that book.
Got it.
And there's a prayer in there to connect to your guides, I think, or an ascended master or an archangel. Use that prayer and put Gabriel's name in it. And then I'm gonna tell you the mechanics of how to do it. What you wanna do is, when you're saying the prayer, close your eyes, feel it to the center of your heart. Ask from your heart. Imagine that your heart is talking to the universe or the divine. And say the prayer from your heart as if your heart had a mouth and it's talking to the universe. Feel what you feel when you do so. You're going to want to say the prayer 3 times in a row. I think it's in the instructions in the book to do that anyway.
Okay.
But if it isn't, do that. And then sit there, feel into your heart, feel what comes up, feel what happens, and start to have a dialogue with Gabriel from your heart to it, him, Gabriel, and practice. You're going to have to practice a little bit to get the connection going. Every day, if you spend 10 or 15 minutes doing this, it's going to be pretty damn cool.
Is this speaking silently on the inside, or is this speaking with also with the mouth, actual words?
Silently on the inside is fine, but if you find that you're too distracted, go with outside.
I'm getting the Kindle right now.
Sweet. Okay, so let me see. I had a question here for myself. Let's talk about this boredom thing, or this perception of boredom. Am I correct? Oh, let me close your records and return your energy to you. This, Cassidy, is going to completely change the state of your heart.
Okay.
It's going to change your whole heart, this relationship with Gabriel.
Okay.
It's going to be pretty cool. It's just going to open it and purify it and clean it up. And you're going to start to get, like, thirsty for the light of it, which is really cool.
Okay.
And it's going to meet a bunch of needs that you've never been able to meet with people in a way that you're not even sure you even have now.
Okay.
This is cool. I'm excited to see this.
I'm excited. Sounds great.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. So the boredom thing, am I correct in my assessment of it that it's a defensive strategy that's really about fear of intimacy and going deeper with someone and being seen? Yes. Is there anything I'm missing about what this is about? Yes. Okay. They're just working on me. It was like the energy of the belief that says slow and intimate can't be fun. That was just sort of like erased at the back of my head. It's kind of interesting. Is there anything else about the boredom thing? No. Okay. We'll save that one for next time. I have another one. We'll save it for next time because I gotta go.
Okay, you're the best. I did want to just super awkwardly, I wanted to shill something because I was in my,
yes,
I was in my Kindle because I was buying this and I was reminded that I wanted to share that our friend Frida, who we just answered a question for, and her husband Corey have published their graphic novel. It's called Fruit Bat. It's available on Kindle. Go looking for graphic novel Fruit Bat Kindle. It's wonderful. I think you should all go check it out. And it's cheap and easy and wonderful.
Oh, cool.
It's queer and subversive and fantastical and all the cool things.
I love it.
So, Fruit Bat on Kindle, graphic novel.
You're the best. I gotta hop off. I love you. Do your work.
You do your work. Bye.
Bye. What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
So you cut this part out.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
All right, I'm closing them. Pew, 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 pew.